Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with comedian Colin Quinn, who's in town for the San Francisco debut of his new stand-up show, One in Every Crowd, at ACT's Strand Theater. From TheaterWorks Silicon Valley, we'll meet actor Max Takis and director Jeffrey Lowe to talk about their current production of The Santa Land Diaries, the classic David Sedaris story made into a play based on that essay by David Sedaris from NPR. You'll enjoy The Santa Land Diaries. We'll also hear from young actor Jonah Briscoe about his starring role in the San Francisco Playhouse production of A Christmas Story, the musical, directed by Susie DaMilano. That and more here on Open Air today. Stay with us. Well, listeners may have heard my recent guest, first guest on HBO's Girls or Judd Apatow's Trainwreck, or may have been fortunate to catch one of his one-man shows, which he's been creating since 1998, several in collaboration with fellow funny man Jerry Seinfeld as director, and a couple of which are now available on Netflix. Or you may remember him from his days in the cast of Saturday Night Live and his in-your-face stint as one of the anchors of Weekend Update. Well, it's been 10 years since comedian Colin Quinn has had the courtesy of offering a show here in San Francisco, but he's back at ACT's Strand Theater. One in Every Crowd brings his trademark hyper-caffeinated observational humor and storytelling prowess to audiences for five performances only, beginning tonight. Opening night tonight. Colin, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thanks, David, and thanks for saying five. I thought it was four until you said that.
Well,
that's a shocker.
Get that on your calendar.
Yeah, maybe please. Saturdays too, probably.
I'd hate to have the understudy do the show.
Unless it's an afternoon show, and I'd be sitting in my room.
Well, we have Park Slope, Brooklyn in common.
Yes!
I owned a brownstone on St. Mark's between 5th and 6th for about a dozen years before moving here in 2002.
Wow!
Where were you in Park Slope?
And did you sell it?
Yeah.
Of course. Well, I'm sure you did well, but guess what? If you had sold it today, I don't want to tell you. It's probably twice whatever you got.
It's scary. It really is scary.
We were fools. We sold in the 80s.
Oh, my.
Not the smartest move.
I was going to say probably for $6,000 for a three-story brownstone.
Well, yeah. I mean, my parents paid, I think, $11,000 back in the 60s and ran out of the house. Who knows what it's worth?
We'll talk numbers later. So where were you in Park Slope?
First Street and 7th Avenue.
First and 7th.
Right in the middle
of it. Great. Yeah, it's a perfect spot.
Yeah.
Right near the park, too.
Near everything, yeah.
Grand Army Plaza.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, your aforementioned show, The New York Story, deals with various reincarnations of Brooklyn and New York City over the years. Which has gone through many transformations. Now, when you were growing up, was gentrification or yuppies and guppies even part of the vocabulary?
No, not at all. It was just it was the opposite. People were fleeing New York, like the fall of Saigon. And then, that started, I guess, in the late 70s, the beginnings of it, in the Upper West Side of Manhattan and then Park Slope, yeah. Mm. But it was an early gentrification place.
Yeah.
You know.
And it goes on and stretches like tentacles all over the rest of the boroughs.
Oh, yeah. And all over the world. We were just talking about San Francisco, and now it's like, you know, same thing as New York now.
Well, you were talking about how people fleeing New York and how when you were growing up, it was an insult to say that your mother worked on 42nd Street.
That's right. Yeah, that was the ultimate. That was fighting. You had to fight if somebody said that. And now they're like, oh, does she work for the Times or does she work for, you know, Condé Nast?
She's sending plush M&M dolls. And
right. Yeah, it's unrecognizable.
And I think it was Jerry Seinfeld who said it's either the Disneyfication of 42nd Street versus, you know, dodging knives back in the
day. Yeah, I mean, there's no middle ground in anything in the world, apparently. Everything's just these extremes.
That show, The New York Story, which I mentioned you can see on Netflix, has such wonderful, I mean, your observational humor is just over the top.
Oh, thanks.
And about the history of New York, like, why the heck is it called, they change it from New Amsterdam. Amsterdam was a wonderful city.
Right.
New Amsterdam is like a reincarnation from the Dutch of Amsterdam.
Right.
Like, what do they name it?
York, like the fifth crummiest city in England at the time.
And they couldn't name it New London.
Right, because there already was a New London, even though We could have easily stole that from them, made them be called New York. So they look more like what York should be, and we look more like London, you know.
In general, I guess fodder for your shows is just watching people, and especially watching New Yorkers.
Yeah, I mean, it's my behavior, too. I mean, but like the new show, One in Every Crowd, is about that one toxic personality in every situation, you know what I mean? In every office, every school, every class, there's at least one. My mother goes, one, you know, she's very cynical. And but there's always one person that just ruins the vibe. But the fascinating thing is that they're always there, and even if they're gone, someone else takes their place. So I'm wondering, they must have a purpose in the ecosystem, because there's no coincidence that everybody knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so there is more than one in every crowd. Is what,
okay, yeah. That's what you and my mom say.
as a New York transplant myself, I think I really, as you have, noticed the difference between friends who were raised here versus those that are raised in California. Just particularly New Yorkers, there's an energy and a bluntness.
Yeah, yeah, they were like rude polite, we used to call them.
And I think you mentioned that gimme a slice is viewed in New York as polite, a polite response, as
right.
opposed to, was that pepperoni farm raised?
Right,
or,
right,
or
right.
Grass fed when it was.
Yeah, you say in the show that how they accuse you of information, like, where'd you get the ice cream? Like, that's totally polite somehow, you know. Like, just abrupt. They're like abrupt people, I always say. It's the Dutch personality, you know.
So is the One in Every Crowd based on observations in New York or just through
No. It's not New York at all. It's more just everybody. It's the whole world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how there's always this one person. It started out as that, but it became about systems after the election, and talking about democracy and talking about what is a system trying to do, and how every system kind of tries to. Every system, whether it's communism, monarchy, democracy, capitalism, they're all trying to say, here's the way this could work. But it always ends up, you know, in conflict. No matter what system it is, it's never going to... There's been no system that anybody can go, that's the one that works, or everybody would be using that one, you know.
Hmm. Well, as a comedian, you must have been, like others, a pig in a sty.
Yeah.
Having someone like the Donald as the Republican candidate...
Yeah.
Then the reality of November sets in.
Right.
And now, to borrow Queen Elizabeth's phrase from a few years back, such an annus horribilis. So has comedy taken some sort of an arc from this, or has it just become tragicomic?
Well, but comedy, I mean, the problem is comedy has to watch out, because first of all, you don't want to be repeating. I mean, of course, I have Trump. You could not have... You'd be a comedian if you didn't have Trump things that you wanted to say about Trump, because it's just too...
It's easy.
It's all right there. But you don't want to be too easy, right, and be somebody getting applause. So a lot of comedy lately gets into scolding and applause, and that's not, to me, what I would want to achieve. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want people to go, you're right, and we agree with you. That's not comedy.
Right.
That's just preaching. You know what I mean? So
you have to be very careful.
You can't just... You know, indulge yourself and be like, this guy's the worst. And people are like, yay. Like, that's not comedy.
Yeah, it's the classic of, you know, slipping on a banana peel is funny if the guy walks up afterwards. Not funny if an ambulance comes and takes him away.
Right. It's just overkill, and it's too much, yeah. Did you ever hear that one about, I think it was Charlie Chaplin, he goes, is it funny if somebody slips on a banana peel? And he goes, no, you see the banana peel, walk around it, and then fall in a manhole.
Only that.
Like the surprise, you know.
I see that already.
Yeah.
Well, several of your shows have had collaborations with Jerry Seinfeld as director.
Yeah.
How did you guys get to be friends?
I don't know, just basically just hanging out in the city back in the late 80s, before he was even Seinfeld. He was already like a big shot as far as... In comedy, he was making money. Like, we'd be like, you hear what Jerry Seinfeld makes a gig? You know what I mean? I already got this much money. Like, because he was already doing well, because he started in the 70s.
Got $200 for a set at the Comedy Cellar.
Wow. Even then, it was more than that.
Yeah.
But I just know him over the years. You know, we just became friends from hanging out in New York, and a lot of his friends went to L.A., so he, you know. I was just from by default.
Hmm. Well, you've been going like an Energizer Bunny since the SNL days and before.
Yeah.
Now, everyone involved with SNL has their Lorne Michaels story, either about their audition or about Lorne himself. What's yours?
I mean, I have many, but I mean, but my audition...
The ones you can say on
my
radio.
My audition was basically went so badly that he was like, That you kept a couple of people alive for a few weeks that I was thinking of bringing into the show. That's how bad it was. I bombed like nobody else. I mean, it was embarrassing, and I bomb a lot. I'm not embarrassed, but I mean, but it was like they had all these 15-year-old kids from a camp in that day for some reason. It was like back in the when the first comedy boom died, like this one might. They had to force audience. So they got all these kids from my camp. They were 15-year-old kids, the whole audience, that they just said, we're going to give you a comedy show. So I was up there doing my thing, which is not for 15-year-old kids. They didn't know what I was talking. They had no idea what I was doing up there. And the guy before me happened to be, like, connecting with them in this other, like, over-the-top, you know. So I had to live off his energy, and I just died so badly, you know. But everybody forgets that part except me. They're just like, yeah, you really bombed. I'm like, I bombed in front of 15-year-olds. You're supposed to bomb in front of 15-year-olds when you're not a 16-year-old comic. If you don't, that means you stink. Sorry, but you brought back a bad memory.
I guess so.
It's only been 20-something years, but I'm still thinking about that.
So these shows that you do are such high energy. How do you keep that? Do you have a classic chocolate crash afterwards? I mean, or do you just like keep that energy going after the show and just
down? I mean, in the old days, I'd be like, you got to go out after the show. My energy is too high. You can't go to sleep. Now I can fall asleep right after the show. I can fall asleep backstage if they had a bed there.
So what's happening after this? I mean, that's the classic question. You know, you could say nothing and would be all right. But the American thing is, what's next?
You have to say it. You have to have the next. Well, you always have it in your mind. But I've been working actually on New York Story. I've been trying to make it like a series. You know, mm-hmm. It's going very badly. And but that's my next goal is to do that.
So home is still New York for you.
Was that yeah.
In the city now, as they say.
I'll die in the subway. I'd like to die in the subway station, actually.
Well, someone did the other day.
What happened?
There was a...
But I have this vision of me dying in the subway, so maybe it'll happen.
Hmm. So
I don't want it to happen soon.
But is the city your home or Brooklyn, as they say?
City. City. I'm one of those phonies that's like, yeah, Brooklyn's the greatest. Where do you live? The Manhattan. Yeah, you loved it so much you left immediately.
So what else is coming on other than trying to make this a series?
Trying to make that a series and just working on one in every crowd. That's it. I'm down to those two.
Where else is this going?
They don't work. I'm finished. What's that?
Where else is this going?
I don't know. I mean,
check the website.
Yeah, I don't know. Allentown, Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's it. Nowadays, you don't have to memorize it. You're just like, look at the website.
Do you know anyone's phone number anymore?
Nope. Nobody. You know? I just know their name in my phone.
It's crazy.
If you see in phone number, you're like, whoa, who's this? This is a psycho. I don't have the name of my phone.
One in every crowd is at ACT, American Conservatory Theater, for 5 performances only through the 17th, opening tonight, by the way. ACT-SFORG for more information. Colin, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks, David. Thanks a lot. Thanks. Some folks like to get away, take a holiday from the neighborhood. Hop a flight to Miami Beach or to Hollywood. But I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River line. I'm in a New York state of mind. Seen all the movie stars in their fancy cars and their limousines. Been high in the Rockies under the evergreens. I know what I'm needing, and I don't want to waste more time. I'm in a New York state of mind. It was so easy living day by day.
Colin Quinn, always in a New York state of mind. Classic New Yorker. So great to talk with him. His show, once again, at ACT's Strand Theater, opens tonight. ACT-SF.org for more information. 5 performances only. Still to come, we'll hear from some folks involved with the Santa Land Diaries, and we'll hear about A Christmas Story at the... San Francisco Playhouse. Speaking of Santaland Diaries, TheaterWorks Silicon Valley presents additional show, holiday show to its season, the Santaland Diaries at the intimate 180-seat Lohman Theater. It's written by David Sedaris based on his classic essay that really launched his career here on NPR about his experience as a Macy's elf during holiday time and the pitfalls and humorous situations that arise as a result of that. Bay Area native Max Takis will make his TheaterWorks debut as Crumpet the Elf / author David Sedaris. He was most recently seen in Los Altos Stage Company's The Crucible, where he was acclaimed for his performance as John Proctor. Takis has appeared in productions with the Palo Alto Players, City Lights Theater Company, Paratheater, and many more. He's also a playwright. And Max joins me in studio to talk about the show. Hey, Max.
Hello. Thanks for having us on.
Of course. And he's joined by director Jeffrey Lowe, who is a playwright himself and director based here in the Bay Area. Among his many credits includes productions at the Renegade Theater Experiment, Oregon Shakespeare Festival, San Jose Rep, and is a company member of Ferocious Lotus Theater Company and San Francisco Playground. He's also the casting associate and company manager at TheaterWorks Silicon Valley. Graduated from the UC Irvine Drama Department. Jeffrey, welcome to you.
Hi, thank you.
Well, great. What a fun show. I mean, inextricably linked, of course, to David Sedaris, who you play. So it's you can channel him. How much of him versus how much of Max is coming out in the production?
I think we got a pretty good mix. We were lucky enough, actually. David Sedaris was doing a reading in San Jose two nights before we started rehearsals. So it was actually really valuable to see how he delivers his material, just how he kind of translates his own material out there for the world to consume, you know, and it was really helpful to inform how we were going to do the same, you know, our way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Jeffrey, what did you bring to the production?
Well, it's interesting because the script that they give you when you're going to perform the Santaland Diaries actually lives remarkably close to the essay that he wrote. It's very, very close to being identical. And of course, when he wrote it with the intent of either just being read to yourself or being read by him and not being performed as a piece of theater. So what we wanted to do was really find a way to make it, it's like 70 minutes with just one guy performing, and when you come in for a piece of theater, you have a certain level of charm and charisma. Not saying that I brought it, because obviously I'm not the actor, but just trying to see a way to keep it active and keep it different from the source material, which is just reading out of a book.
And Max, have you done the show elsewhere? Is this your first time doing this?
This is my first time doing a one-man show of anything, yeah. So this was quite the learning experience.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what you learned in the process.
I learned how difficult it is to navigate a script that's just text. I mean, when we got it, there's no semblance of what your set is going to be or even blocking or anything. It's just text, which is both amazingly freeing but then similarly extremely daunting when you have 25 pages of just talking, you know. So it was great. I mean the team that we've assembled was amazingly organic in terms of how we built the show around such simple text, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So for the one listener out there who is not familiar with the Santaland Diaries, maybe you can give us a synopsis of the show.
Yeah, it's basically the story of David as he's down on his luck and his funds, and so he takes a last-minute job as an elf in the Macy's Santaland Experience, which is basically the mall where the people come and have their picture taken with Santa with their children.
And madcap mayhem and
interesting
situations
all
arise.
All sorts of things that I think ring true in every service industry nightmare, you know, that many people have experienced.
Including what, you know, is kind of topical in terms of a Santa who is a little flirty, shall we say.
There are a couple segments we found, actually, moving through the script. We're like, oh, this was written in the early 90s, and there are certain things that are now have a much different tone that we had to navigate, you know, which was a similar interesting learning experience.
Could you share a part of that scene with us?
I mean, it's basically this one elf who takes advantage of the fact that he's going to be interacting with many mothers who comes through, and so he hits on every single one of them unabashedly. And we found a way to still get a good crowd response out of it by basically having me react just as horrified as they would. You know, that's how we kind of really, really framed it.
Are there more people in the show? Or is it just Max?
We have a gentleman named Antonio P. Uppet III, which is a puppet. I couldn't keep that joke. It's a blue puppet. He's British and amazing. But that was one of the things that when I met with our design team, we were trying to figure out, you know, the Santaland Diaries is one of the most produced pieces of theater in the country.
Really? I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. American Theater Magazine, which publishes a top 10 list of the most produced plays in the country, they go, the top 10 most produced plays in the country, and they put in parentheses, not including A Christmas Carol, Shakespeare, or The Santaland Diaries, because it's done that much.
That's pretty amazing.
So we all sat down, and we go, well, we want to really make this our own, and how are we going to add some of our own fun and panache to it? And for whatever reason, this is like a year ago, we go, a puppet. And then we just all fell in love with the idea. And our scenic designer, Chris Fitzer, he has a good friend named Mark Stiss, who designed this puppet. And he actually works for the Jim Henson Company over in New York. And because he was good friends, he was like, just finished making some puppets for a Chance the Rapper music video. And he goes, yeah, I can make you guys a dude. So we have a puppet who comes in dressed exactly like Max as an elf. And there's some sections where Crumpet or David Sedaris talks about his interactions with different folks, and the puppet then encapsulates David Sedaris, and Max gets to play the various other Santas and other people, and we add some fun to it.
It's great fun, yeah. Yeah. Well, so Max, what's your highlight of the show?
I enjoy all of the puppet work. It's a lot of fun, but we've built in a lot of good audience interaction too, which I have really, really enjoyed, because every night you're going to get completely different people in the house, and so the way that they interact with we basically plan at this point in the time, do this with whoever is in that seat. What happens after that is entirely up to that person, you know. So mm-hmm. that's been a lot of fun. Almost every night there have been some sections that are entirely different based on what the audience does.
And you've got that freedom, both Jeffrey and Max, that there isn't much other than the text to deal with, right? He doesn't mm-hmm. offer any kind of suggestions for scenery or stage direction.
And Max won't screw up any other scene partner because it's just him. Yeah. So he won't throw anybody off. I mean, we have this bit. We have this great bit that goes throughout the show, not to spoil anything, but throughout the show he has like pieces of paper and a bag and a bottle, and he asks audience members to just like, as he's going, to just throw it away for him. And it just keeps growing where he asks people to throw things away for him. And then there was one night on Saturday where there was a gentleman who was just so game to do anything. And he hands him a piece of paper to throw away for him, and the guy takes it, and without skipping a beat, he just throws it over his shoulder, and the paper lands on the women behind him, and it was just the funniest thing.
Yeah, we had to stop. I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah, great job.
The Santaland Diaries is at TheaterWorks Silicon Valley through the 23rd. It's at the Lohman Theater, which is on El Monte Road in Los Altos Hills. Max, what's coming for you after the holiday season? A little rest and relaxation, perhaps?
Yeah, I'll be going to Europe for the very first time right after the show closes, and then a month off, and then in February I'll start up again we're going to start rehearsing The Merchant of Venice at City Lights Theater Company in San Jose.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And Jeffrey, your work continues at Silicon Valley with your other hat on?
Yeah, I'll be putting my other hat on, continuing my work there, and I'm actually, right after we opened, I started rehearsals the other day. I'm doing Peter and the Starcatcher at Hillbarn Theater up in Foster City.
Oh, fantastic. I know some folks there. It should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
The Santaland Diaries also includes some interesting music, doesn't it?
Yeah. we have also in the vein of making this production ours, we wanted to make sure that we ended the show with some music that you might not see in a normal TheaterWorks Silicon Valley show. So we made it go with some Run DMC. They have one of our favorite Christmas songs called Christmas in Hollis.
There we go. All right, Jeffrey, Max, thanks for coming in. Have a great run of the Santaland Diaries.
Thank you so much
for having us.
Thank you
very much.
Now through the 23rd, theaterworks.org for more information. Max Takis starring as Crumpet the Elf / David Sedaris, directed by Jeffrey Lowe. Different holiday music for you here on Open Air. That's going to be heard in Max Takis and Jeffrey Lowe's version of the Santaland Diaries, David Sedaris' classic story, now one of the most produced plays in the country. Theaterworks.org for those performances through the 23rd of this month. And Theaterworks Silicon Valley is at 12345 South El Monte Road in Los Altos Hills. Theaterworks.org for more info. Good afternoon. Once again, I'm David Latulib. Continuing with our holiday theme here on this week's Open Air, San Francisco Playhouse is presenting A Christmas Story, the musical, with music and lyrics by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, and a book by Joseph Robinette. It's directed by Susie Damolano with music direction by Dave Dabrowski, and runs through January 13th with a couple of added performances over Christmas week as well. It's based on the classic 1983 film of the same name, which starred Darren McGavin as the father and a memorable Peter Billingsley as the boy, 9-year-old Ralphie Parker. The now classic story by Gene Shepherd adapted into this full-length musical with great music, by the way. 9-year-old Ralphie, if you don't remember the story, wants nothing more for Christmas than an official Red Ryder carbine action 200-shot range model air rifle. But first he'll have to navigate past a maniacal department store Santa, an infamous leg lamp, a triple dog dare to lick a frozen flagpole, and much more. The musical version of this was nominated for 3 Tony Awards in 2013, and it's a really heartfelt tale that you'll really enjoy in the San Francisco Playhouse production. Ralphie is played by Jonah Briscoe, who attends 7th grade at Hillcrest Middle School here in Oakland. He's performed regionally at the 42nd Street Moon in Do I Hear a Waltz, the Cowell Theater in Max Understood, multiple roles at Berkeley Playhouse at his young age already, including The Music Man, as well as TheaterWorks' New Works Festival. In 2016, he was on the national tour of Pippin and played Theo through the tour's 6-week run in Amsterdam. Jonah, such a pleasure to welcome you back, and thanks for putting up with your cold as we try to negotiate our talk here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Well, this is such a fun show. You must have a lot of fun, cold and all, trying to produce, trying to be a part of this production.
Yeah, it's really fun. I'm having a great time.
What's your favorite part of the show?
My favorite part of the show is probably that it's such a wonderful Christmas show, and I'm Jewish, but I love celebrating. I love doing a show where I can celebrate the meaning of Christmas and the ways that we interact with each other as a cast and a company is just very, it's very beautiful, and the show itself is very deep and meaningful.
Mm-hmm. Did you read the original story by Gene Shepherd to kind of prepare you for this?
I didn't, but I did watch the movie a few times.
Yeah.
That was really fun and got me into the show. Yeah.
The production that's being done at SF Playhouse under Susie D'Amelato is really quite a creative production. There's a lot of set to manipulate around.
Yeah, we have an amazing set designer and production team. This set was big. We had a lot of props, a lot of quick changes, and everybody has worked really hard to get it all prepared for this run.
Talk to me a little bit about Susie D'Amelano's direction for you.
So she's been a great director. She really tries to work with the cast on trying to tell the story in a different way that's going to make the audience feel their feelings that they're feeling. And she wants the story to be simple yet very complex in a way that tells the story that really shows the audience what the story's about.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, being in what you said, eighth grade now. All right,
yeah.
That's an older bio that I got from the Palace Theater. How can you manage to go on these national tours and spend time in Amsterdam and all that?
Well, I've been very fortunate to be at schools that support me during doing acting and the thing that I love. So when I do get shows where I have to go away or miss school for a while, I get independent study, which means that I get work for my school, and I get to do that while I have like a tutor or somebody that the show assigns for me. And it's been really fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was Amsterdam like for you?
A lot of bicycles, uh-huh. a lot of canals, a lot of people. But it was an amazing experience to be in Europe, and to the theater that we performed at was beautiful. We went to Europe. There's all the countries are so close together. We can go to different places. We can see different things that I've never seen before. And just to have my family was with me, and that was amazing.
Oh, nice. And how about for the national tour? What sort of cities did you discover?
Well, I went to Providence, Rhode Island, and Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and that was the national tour is in a different environment because everybody's been to all these different places. It's like they've done the show so many times, week after week. They perform for different audience, different theater. We have to move the set to different stages, and it's just a great environment.
Mm-hmm. So if this cold of yours gets worse, do you have someone that's going to be taking your spot as an understudy that you can take a day off or two?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to be out for 2 weeks. Uh-huh. I have a nasal congestion and infection, but I've also been out for a week, and very fortunate we have understudy. I have an understudy named Mario Herrera, who's really stepped up and been amazing, got all their lines, and that's what understudies are for, just be there when somebody goes down.
You never know.
Yeah, it's been a great learning experience because I just know that somebody's there for you.
Right, right.
It happens.
Well, hopefully this will pass and you'll get a few more shows in before the end runs on January 13th. So is musical theater your ambition, or do you just enjoy doing it on the side? What do you want to do when you get out of school, or go to, what do you want to go to school for?
Musical theater is my passion. It's something that I've learned from a young age that I knew that I liked performing. I liked being on stage. I like singing. That's the musical theater part of it. I like acting, but I really like singing. So I really want to pursue my dream. My dream is to be on Broadway one day, and I really want to do that musical theater wise.
Well, by eighth grade, you've already gotten a great start. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What other shows are coming up for you after this?
I don't have a next show yet, but
it's always a dangerous question for an actor, I admit.
Yes, I. If anybody's looking out for a 13-year-old boy, I'm open. But I'm looking into also going down to LA and looking at the TV and the commercials and the movie world too, because that's also very powerful and could also be a good learning experience for me.
Great. Are you already represented by an agency around here?
I am.
Fantastic.
Yes.
Who are you with?
Paradigm Agency. In New York and L.A.
Nice. They've been
great.
They'll be looking out for you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope that the cold gets over and you get a few more shots at A Christmas Story. It really is a wonderful production. Again, Susie Damilano, who is the co-artistic director of the Playhouse, is offering direction. Can you tell us something a bit about your other castmates?
Yeah. Well, we have a big cast, a lot of kids. The kids are double casted, which means that they switch off during shows. And then we have a great ensemble adult cast, including Ryan Drummond, who plays the dad, and Abby Hogg, who plays the mom. And they've been a great cast to perform with. They're very we're very comfortable with each other, and we've been rehearsing for, we rehearsed for 4 weeks, been doing the shows now for around 3 weeks, and they've been, we've really interacted with each other in a good way, meaning that we know the show very well. Even with the challenges that we've gone through, it's been, we've clicked, we've come together, and now we're performing this show that's really beautiful.
Another show under your belt. That's fantastic. Jonah Briscoe as the star, but on the sidelines right now for A Christmas Story, the musical. You'll certainly enjoy this musical version of the classic Gene Shepherd story, adapted by Joseph Robinette, who did the book. Music and lyrics by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul. sfplayhouse.org for more information. The shows will be running through January 13th, with a couple of added performances, one on December 22nd as a matinee and the 27th as a matinee. Jonah, feel better, and keep us informed of your career as it progresses.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
We're pulling out our hair, cause it all comes down to Christmas. We've got one shot, and it's 24 days away. We have to hurry up, cause it all comes down to Christmas Day.
Music and lyrics by Benj Pasek and Justin Paul, and a book by Joseph Robinette, adapted from the classic Gene Shepherd story. Mario Herrera will be playing 9-year-old Ralphie Parker, while my guest Jonah Briscoe recovers. Hopefully Jonah will get a few more shots at A Christmas Story, the musical. It really is a lot of fun, and great, great theater of SF Playhouse, beautifully produced, directed by Susie Damilano. sfplayhouse.org for more information. Well, it's a birthday today of someone that I hold in great regard, and I'm still discovering some of the craziness of. Lindley Armstrong Spike Jones was born on this date in 1911. He passed away back in 1965, when I was two. He was an American musician and band leader specializing in satirical arrangements of popular songs and classical music. Ballads that received the Jones treatment were punctuated by gunshots, whistles, cowbells, and some really incredibly comedic vocals. From the early 40s to the mid-50s, Spike Jones and his band recorded under the title Spike Jones and His City Slickers and toured the United States and Canada as the Musical Depreciation Review. Back in 1944, RCA released his Spike Jones Presents for the Kiddies version of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite. This arrangement was credited to Joe Country Washburn with lyrics by Foster Carling, and we happen to have it here for your enjoyment on Open Air. Happy birthday, Spike Jones.
Once on a Christmas Eve, a little girl lay dreaming. She dreamed of wondrous gifts that hung upon her Christmas tree. There, in her dream, she spied in silver brightly gleaming a funny old nutcracker hung beside a beautiful sugar plum fairy.
I am the cracker of the nuts.
Oh, he's the cracker of the nuts.
And you are made of sugar plums.
Yes, I'm the fairy sugar plum.
The nutcracker's the colonel of a regiment of soldiers.
Tin?
Wood?
Some are made of honey cakes.
The soldiers, everyone, must love the sugar candy fairy, for they're always at the ready, guarding every move she makes.
Now, in her dream, it seemed the Christmas tree got bigger. Then, through the floor, there screamed an army of a thousand mice.
Hail the king!
Oh, hail the king with a tail like a string on a king. It's a thing to behold.
I'm the Mouse King. I want to fight. I want to fight. Let's have a war. Hey, Nutcracker, you got a sword?
I accept the challenge to fight you. Yes, I got a sword. I will prove that I'm your master and your lord.
Nutcracker staggering. Oh, what to do? Oh. The Mouse King is set now, ready to run him through. The Nutcracker's down. He's up now. He's down again. The little girl is worried to death. Her face wears a frown again. She takes off her shoe, takes careful aim, and hurls it at the Mouse King. Zip, zap, zaim.
The Mouse King's down.
Hit him on the head.
The cheesy little geezer tried to be a Julius Caesar, so she bopped him on the beezer, and the Mouse King's dead.
Think did happen when the mouse turned up his toes. The nutcracker changed to a handsome prince right in front of the little girl's nose. So they all joined hands as happy as can be. Why don't you join them now and march around the Christmas tree?
Land, where the rivers are honey. our strawberry jam. When the Nutcracker Prince and the girl landed there, the Sugar Plum Fairy was giving a ball. And here's what the prince and the little girl saw. In her beautiful rock, can we fall?
Seven candy fairies, sugar plums, jelly beans, chocolate bars, dance the minuet.
With the candy cherries, lollipops, peppermints, candy canes as they pirouette.
See the fairy princess curtsying gracefully, beautifully swaying to the tune.
Music in the air,
so entrancing,
flowers in her hair,
while she's dancing,
lovers everywhere.
Chinaman kiss.
When they started in to do a dance that sounded something like this.
Chang Fong Chi Hop, so wing, so lee. Oh, light your fire like a bang up Christmas.
See a tin flute dancing?
Did you ever know a piccolo could dance a jig?
Here's the tune they dance to when they get a chance to. It's a kind of a rinky-dinky ending with a whirligig.
Penny flute goes dancing.
He'll never ask a lady piccolo, of course.
He never goes for small things. What he likes of all things is
a horse.
Don't you think they're both entrancing? What could be as graceful as a hunk of tin?
Especially in the chorus, dancing with the horus. That's a pretty picture, or my name is Gunga Din.
Leave them gently,
maybe instrumentally.
In the sugar plum fairy's palace, in the middle, just off center, was a spooky old room that the little girl knew she was strictly forbidden to enter.
The door was covered with cobwebs, and this most mysterious room was dark as an elephant's tummy, still as a mummy's tomb. But the little girl got curious. Curiosity is what killed the cat. She crept to the door, got down on the floor, and peeked through the crack. What's that?
I say, Holmes, what was that?
He winked his eyes, stroked his beard,
and danced the fol-de-rol doll, the fol-de-rol
doll. The Russians, you know, are very well known.
From Timbuktu to France,
they fold their arms across their chest and sit on their pants and dance. Oh, they dance on the seat of their pants. Hi!
Tchaikovsky, this dance is Tupsky. Where'd you ever find a tune to get me down so low?
Ouch! Ouch! Oh!
Copland came waltzing down
from Marmalade Mountain.
All of the blooms were there, dancing the waltz of the flowers.
Every little yellow columbine met her fellow honeysuckle vine.
Every posy loves to ring around the rosy till the morning hours.
Each handsome dandelion waltz with his own brown-eyed Susan.
Every little daisy in the dell knew a secret none of them would tell.
If you'd ask them, they would only say, she loved you not, she loved you, loved you not.
She what?
And then they'd go soaring, soaring, soaring.
Think azaleas and camellias met their favorite bougainvilleas.
Rhododendrons twined their tendrons as they curtsied and bowed to all.
We could mention some dissension when a dahlia paid attention
to a doe-eyed, blue-eyed gentian who just sat by the garden wall.
Oh, wallflower, your petal heart is breaking. What does it gain you crying your heart out? Why does it pain you? Why don't you start out to find a little love?
Wallflower, know that although the heart is breaking,
sadness is fleeting, joy you'll be meeting. Open your heart and hark to love's greeting.
A healthy helping of Spike Jones and his version of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker Suite to round things out here on Open Air. Happy birthday, Spike Jones, the very late, great Spike Jones, 1911 to 1965. Great takes on the classics. And a new discovery for me, this Nutcracker version, thanks to Neil Swinkles, producer of Open Air, for bringing it to my attention. Speaking of bringing to your attention, I would be remiss if I didn't invite you, dear listener, to the Bay Area Rainbow Symphony on Saturday at 8, Sunday at 2. Yours truly, David LaTulipe, will be in the flute section performing Shostakovich's lovely Symphony No. 5, as well as the Copland Outdoor Overture. Roger Woodward is our guest pianist for Prokofiev's Piano Concerto No. 3. The concerts are in the Taube Atrium at the Wilsey Center at the top of the Veterans Building here in San Francisco. bars-sf.org for more information. Kitka presents its Winter Songs concerts this weekend as well, and the San Francisco Symphony will have Christian Tetzloff as a guest solo violin. It'll be a solo recital, that is, performing the sonatas and partitas of Bach on Sunday the 17th. Also, Holiday Jazz Concert at SF Jazz, Dizzy Atmosphere, a tribute to Dizzy Gillespie, SF Jazz, for all the happenings at SF Jazz around the holiday season. And the San Francisco Choral Artists, A Rebel's Christmas, Martin Luther's Musical Reformation, sfca.org for more information. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. Show suggestions to david@kalw.org.